again.
Hi.
We've missed you.
And welcome everyone to Mass Murder. It's been a minute. In case you don't remember, we are your favorite true crime self-care podcast. We're your hostesses, Avery.
And Nicole. And in case you forgot, we're here to tell you about two things, masks and murder. First, we'll dive into a little true crime story, and then we'll follow it up with a feel-good self-care session where we try some type of face mask and tell you what we think about it.
But in case you forgot, and before we get to the story, quick reminder, we aren't experts, so please don't take our comments as hard facts. We did our best to research everything and, of course, added in our own personal flair that stems from both of our true crime obsessions. Now, let's talk about the elephant in the room. It has, as I said, been a minute.
A hot minute, if you will.
Sorry about that. We had too much fun in Hot Girl Summer, apparently, and made it Hot Girl Fall. And there's honestly no excuse. We were just busy, just doing things.
Living life, and living the dream.
Here we are. Whoops, it's November.
Hello.
Sorry, bad, but we're here. It's fine. I'm sure you had some catching up to do or, I don't know, something.
We had plenty of other podcasts to listen to. It's fine. They held you over.
That's true. Yeah, docuseries are five. Little Netflix.
Netflix and chill. The new season of You.
Yeah, all those things.
Yeah.
So, I guess let's just get back to it.
Yeah, let's get back to the real shit. We're going to start with a little bit of background for our lovely listeners who stuck with us through our little hiatus. We relatively recently watched the movie So I Married an Axe Murderer, and you, Avery, offhandedly, aka you were definitely joking, said something like, oh, we should do a story about a female axe murderer. And me being me, I immediately took to Google, and that brings us to today's story. Today we're going to cover the story of Catherine Mary Knight, who's the first Australian woman to be sentenced to life in prison without parole.
And who I assume wishes an axe was a weapon in the game of Clue?
I mean, that would be a good weapon, right?
It would be. Why isn't that?
Let's take it up with Mattel. It's Mattel, right?
I don't know. Sounds like a solid guess, though.
All right, cool. Well, that being said, let's take it back on to the beginning. Catherine's mother, Barbara Rowan?
Yeah, Rowan looks right.
And her husband, Jack Rowan, had four sons that they were raising in the small town of Aberdeen in New South Wales. Jesus Christ. New South Wales, Hunter Valley.
It's now, very long.
I know. A mouthful. But real quick, just going to go ahead and call out that Aberdeen was a really small conservative rural town, at least at the time. I'm not sure how it is today, but I do know that in 2016, the population was only 1,894 people.
Yeah, that's small. Yeah. It's smaller than some people's, like, high schools.
I know, that's scary.
That's, I mean, much bigger than mine, but that's a lot of people. And in that context, not a lot of people in town.
Yes.
I'll stop talking. Continue. Okay,
cool. So Barbara started to have an affair with a friend and coworker of Jack's, a man named Ken Knight. Now, with both of these families being from such a small town, they were both pretty well known, and when the affair came out, it caused a huge scandal. So huge, in fact, that Barbara and Ken... Hey, Barbie and Ken.
Cute.
I know. So, Barbie and Ken left Aberdeen, and they moved to Moore, which is also in New South Wales, about a 4 to 5 hour drive north. And full disclosure on the distance and the time, it was about noon on a Saturday local Australia time when I checked the distance, so...
Not rush hour.
Yeah, take that for what it's worth, essentially. Now, none of Barbara and Jack's children made the move with her. The weird thing to me is that the two older boys stayed with their father, and the two younger were moved to Sydney to be raised by an aunt. But, whatever. Even so, Barbara and Ken went on to have four additional children together. Additional for Barbara, I'm honestly not sure if Ken had any other children. Two of the children were Catherine and her older twin sister, who were born on October 24th, 1955, in Tenterfield. Tenterfield was another roughly 3.5 hours away. And when Catherine and her sister were four, her mother's first husband, Jack, passed away. The two sons that had been living with him moved in with their mother and Ken, meaning now the girls have some new half-brothers. Woo!
Woo-woo!
Although Barbara and Ken moved from a pretty conservative town, Ken was actually reported to be a huge piece of shit.
Sorry. All right, those things are not mutually exclusive.
I know. You know, whatever. Ken was a huge alcoholic, and he openly used violence to intimidate and rape his wife, sometimes up to 10 times a day.
Cool. Sounds like a real winner.
Yeah. And as a weird form of coping, Barbara often told her daughters intimate details of her sex life and how much she hated sex and men.
Oh, come on. I mean, like, I understand you're in a rough spot. You need someone to talk to. But putting that on your kids?
Yeah.
That's not, no good.
Yeah. So Catherine alleges that she was frequently sexually assaulted by several members of her family until she was the age of 11. And psychiatrists do accept her claims, and the events are even confirmed by family members.
So, does that mean that the family knew about it and just did nothing?
I have no idea.
Like, I can't. Family should not be hiding this kind of dirty laundry. I mean, it's not... We all get it. That is ridiculous.
Yeah. And then later in life, Catherine confided in her mother about a sex act that her partner at the time wanted her to partake in, but that she wasn't really interested in. And Barbara told her to put up with it and to stop complaining. You know, probably a side effect of all of the years of sexual abuse she had to endure.
Yeah, thanks for the advice, Mom. So helpful.
Yeah, just shut up and take it.
Yeah, wow.
So apart from her twin, the only person that Catherine was really close with was their uncle, Oscar Knight, who was a champion horseman. Unfortunately, he did die by suicide when Catherine was 14.
Oh, so she lost the only person she could actually, like, go to.
Yeah, the only, like, adult she could go to.
Wow. Yeah, that's horrible. Well, that same year, in 1969, their family moved back to Aberdeen. The girls were enrolled in Muswell Brook High School. Here, Catherine became a loner and bullied younger children. Can't say I'm too surprised by that. She did kind of suffer through a fair amount of abuse through her childhood, but doesn't make it cool. But she often flew into a rage and assaulted at least one boy at school with a weapon, which, I mean, stepping up to a boy. Must have been a very angry child. Again, slightly understandable. There was another instance in which she was injured by a teacher, but the teacher was found to have been acting in self-defense. Now, on the flip side, when Catherine wasn't in a rage or acting out, she was actually a model student and often earned awards for good behavior, which I find this report a little odd because at the age of 15, she left school and hadn't learned to read or write. So how do all of these things go together?
One of these things, not like the other.
Yeah, it seems strange, but I don't know. Maybe she had, like, her favorite English teacher and she was a model student for them and they're the one that gave the report, and the math teacher was the one she always acted out with. I don't know. There's always more to the story.
The shades of gray, if you will.
Exactly. However, she did gain employment as a cutter in a clothing factory, so at least she was making a living. Just a year later, she quit her job as a cutter, which sounds so morbid, but is apparently actually a job title, to start what she had called her quote-unquote dream job, cutting up offal at the local abattoir. Now, not gonna lie, had to Google both of those things, and here's what they actually mean. Offal are the entrails and internal organs of an animal used as food. Yeah. Yeah. Not cute, but, you know, someone's got to do it. And an abattoir is basically a slaughterhouse.
And this is her dream job?
Her dream job at a young age as well. Also not growing up. Like, I feel like if you grew up with, like, your father was a butcher, owned a butcher shop, you're used to it. No, just dove right in.
All right.
And I feel like we're already not surprised to hear that she absolutely thrived at the abattoir, slaughterhouse, what have you. She was quickly promoted to boning and was given her own set of butcher knives. She hung these knives over her bed at home so that, quote, they would always be handy if I needed them, which she continued to do everywhere she lived up until her incarceration. When Catherine was 18, she met David Stanford Kellett. David was her coworker and happened to be a pretty heavy drinker, which had been attributed to his dark past. His best friend was killed in front of him in a shunting accident, which I'm not 100% sure what that is, but it's either a car accident where one vehicle drives into the back of another or something to do with trains. Google wasn't really helpful. Then later after that experience, he was present at the scene when a train ran into a bus and killed six children. He helped to rescue the injured children and to remove bodies of those that were killed. So we can safely say that he had experimented or had experienced a level of trauma that no one envies. He started working at the Aberdeen Abattoir after losing his nearby shunting job because he fell asleep during the job, causing a derailment. At first, he was friends with Catherine's brother. That was before the two started dating, of course, and they made quite the pair. If David got into a fight while they're out, Catherine would step in and back him up. I mean, from what we've already talked about, she was not afraid to use her fist. She was well known around town for physically threatening anyone who upset her. A year later, in 1974, Catherine proposed and the two got married. Woman before her time.
Right?
They rode up to the ceremony on Catherine's motorcycle with David already very drunk. That night, Catherine tried to strangle David. Sorry.
So romantic.
Yeah, I know,
what
right?
What a great wedding night.
Also, like, that's how we wrote the points. Because he fell asleep on her, I mean, only after having sex with her three times. How dare he?
So rude.
Yeah. Who has sex on their wedding night? Only three times.
Ugh.
Shockingly, the marriage didn't get better after that, and the violence continued. I know, it's shocking. During her pregnancy, so she got pregnant.
Yes.
Catherine got so mad at David for getting home late from a darts competition that she burned all of his clothes and shoes and hit him across the back of the head with a frying pan. Yeah. But, I mean, he had reached the finals, so it's important.
There was a good reason for him being home so late, right?
Yeah, I mean, to some people, that makes perfect sense. Obviously, fearing for his life, he ran to a neighbor's house where he collapsed and was later treated for a severely fractured skull. Even though police wanted to press charges, Catherine somehow managed to talk him into dropping the charges against her.
Okay, then. So the pair's daughter, Melissa Ann, was born in 1976. Shortly after, in May, David decided that he had had enough and left Catherine. For another woman, nonetheless.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then he moved to Queensland. Queensland?
Queensland. Queensland.
Queensland. I don't know why I had to say it four times. The same way, every time. The day after David left, Catherine was distraught. She was seen pushing her baby down the street, violently throwing the pram, stroller, from side to side.
Yeah, not the baby's fault. Let's not do that.
The authorities were called, and she was admitted to St. Elmo's Hospital. There, she was diagnosed with postpartum depression and spent several weeks recovering.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, postpartum depression is a complex mix of physical, emotional, and behavioral changes that happen in some women, generally within about 4 weeks of giving birth. It's based on the length of time between delivery, the onset of, and the severity of the depression. According to WebMD, postpartum depression is linked to chemical, social, and psychological changes that happen when having a baby. The term describes a range of physical and emotional changes that many new mothers experience. The chemical changes involve a rapid drop in hormones after delivery. The actual link between the drop and the depression still isn't clear, but what is known is that the levels of estrogen and progesterone, aka the female reproductive hormones, increase tenfold during pregnancy. Then they drop so sharply after delivery. Usually by about the 3-day mark after a woman gives birth, the levels of these hormones drop back to what they were before pregnancy. Or raise up to what they were before
Go
pregnancy.
Back.
Realign to what they were before pregnancy.
It's horrifying because, yeah. I mean, you can't control your hormones.
Yeah, you can't control what your body does.
Yeah, it's very scary.
A lot of, or most moms, experience what's known as the baby blues after delivery, which generally only lasts about a week or two, but about 1 in every 10 develops into the more serious postpartum depression. There is no one cause to postpartum depression, but there are some common physical and emotional factors that can contribute. These include hormones. The dramatic drop in the estrogen and progesterone after you give birth might play a role. Other hormones produced by your thyroid gland also may drop sharply and make you feel tired, sluggish, and depressed. A lack of sleep. When you're sleep-deprived and overwhelmed, you may have trouble handling even minor problems. Anxiety. You may be anxious about your ability to care for your newborn. Self-image. You may feel less attractive, struggle with your sense of identity, or feel as though you've lost control over your life. Any of these issues or combination of these issues can contribute to postpartum depression.
I feel like all of these things are issues that women deal with on a monthly basis, at least. Anxiety, feeling like you aren't, like, pretty enough. This is all pretty common. I can't imagine what it's like after you popped out a whole human.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like magnifying all the things that we already feel. Yeah. But unfortunately, it appears that the treatment that Catherine received at St. Omo's didn't actually help. 2 months after her release, Catherine put little two-month-old Melissa on a railway line shortly before a train was due to arrive. Then she stole an axe and found her way into town where she threatened to kill several people.
Oh, my face. I know. My eyes are huge.
You have no words.
I'm not going to lie, guys. I don't remember how this story goes right now, and it is horrifying.
Yes. Don't worry, because luckily, a local man known as Old Ted was foraging near the railway where Melissa was left, and he rescued her.
Okay, see? Point. Case in point. Yes.
Reportedly, by all accounts, his rescue occurred minutes before the train arrived.
Oh, my God. This is a movie?
Waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, Catherine was once again arrested and taken back to St. Elmo's Hospital. Miraculously, she recovered and signed herself out the very next day.
Oh, that's how it happens, huh? Yeah. Just a good night's sleep. That's all she needed.
Just a little bit of rest. But yet again, she wasn't actually cured.
Shocking.
I know. A few days later, she slashed a woman's face and demanded that the woman drive her to Queensland to find David.
Oh, yeah.
The woman obliged, you know, probably just trying not to get her face slashed up again.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yes. But she did manage to escape when they stopped at a service station. Unfortunately, by the time the police arrived, Catherine had already taken a young boy hostage and was threatening him with her knife. Police attacked and disarmed her using brooms.
Because that's what they had handy.
Now, did they go into the service station and just start grabbing brooms? Or are they not armed? I'm so confused.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of countries don't have the same level of guns present. And
I feel like I've watched an Australian police, like, ad on YouTube or something.
And their weapon of choice is brooms?
And no, I feel like they had guns.
Also, another idea for Clue.
Brooms?
A broom.
It was Miss Scarlet in the sitting room with the broom.
I mean.
All right. We're making a new version of Clue. Me and you.
I dig it. Let's do it.
All right. So after the police disarmed her with their brooms, they arrested her, and she was admitted to the Morissette Psychiatric Hospital. Ooh, switching it up, not going back to St. Elmo's.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, while at the hospital, she told the nurse that she stopped at that particular service station because she wanted to kill the mechanic. The mechanic had worked on David's car, which had allowed him to, you know, leave her, aka he had to go because he was a part of her sad story. After she was finished with the mechanic, she had intended to continue to travel to Queensland, where she would then kill David and his mother. Probably because his mother birthed David, and that's her problem.
Or maybe that's where he was living. With his mom.
All of the things.
She's sheltering him from her.
Mm-hmm. Well, police found David and told him about the incident. Instead of being concerned and moving away with or trying to protect his mother, David left his girlfriend to move to Aberdeen with his mother and to support Catherine. I mean, I think this is pretty noble. Like, he recognized the mental health aspect of her outburst and wanted to help instead of just saying, like, not my problem. But still pretty bold. On August 8th, 1976, Catherine was released from the psychiatric hospital to the care of David and his mother. The trio moved to Ipswich. That's a fun name. To Ipswich, which is just west of Brisbane, and Catherine got a job at Denmore Meatworks. Coming back! They lived in Ipswich without incident for the next 6.5 years. Then on March 6th, 1983, they had their second daughter named Natasha. The following year, Catherine left David and moved home with her parents back in Aberdeen and then rented a house in Muswellbrook, returning to work at the abattoir where she first met David. Unfortunately, just a year after starting back at her job, she hurt her back and went on disability. She moved back to Aberdeen when the government gave her a housing commission residence there, basically like public housing assistance programs. Catherine's next relationship came the following year when she met 38-year-old David Saunders, who was a miner.
Another David!
Seeing some trends.
One trick pony.
Just a few months after meeting, David number two moved in with Catherine and her daughters, but he also kept his own apartment.
As you do when you make that type of commitment after just a couple of months.
Smart, yep. Don't want to jump in too quickly. Catherine eventually got jealous whenever David would do anything without her, and this basically prompted him to move out of her house and back into his own apartment. You know, only so much one man can take. But Catherine was a little pathetic and followed him, begging him to return home. Some might say she was a nice little mix of pathetic and crazy. In May 1987, she cut the throat of his, two-month-old dingo pup in front of him. Oh, the dogs. As a warning of what would happen if he ever cheated on her, then she knocked him out with a frying pan.
Get with the frying pan.
Yeah, the frying pan. Like, what did the dingo do? All right. I have a problem with this. Okay. June of the following year, Catherine gave birth to her third daughter, Sarah. Just after the birth of the baby, David put a deposit down on a house, which Catherine paid off after her workers' compensation came through in 1989. Catherine morbidly, oh, that's a weird word to have a problem with. Catherine morbidly decorated the house with animal skins, skulls, horns, rusty animal traps, leather jackets, old boots, machetes, rakes, and pitchforks. It's like the next new trend.
Sounds super foamy.
Yeah.
Just what I want to come home and relax to.
Right, yeah. Like, everything's pointing. You could die by touching anything. But, I mean, apparently the house was completely covered in it. No space, including ceilings. Like, we're left bare everywhere. All the stuff.
Sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Finally, David decided that he had just had enough. He took leave from work, gave up his old drinking habits, and booked it out of town. Catherine tried and tried to find him, but no one was giving up his location, and she eventually gave up. A few months later, David went home to try to see his daughter and found out that Catherine went to the police and took out a protective order against him, which in Australia is known as an apprehended violence order, or an AVO. And that's the end of what we know about David number two. Not number one, but number two.
Number two. So, soon enough, Catherine had moved on and was pregnant again by a man named John Chillingworth.
We got another fertile myrtle up in here.
Yeah. At least it's not another David, though.
Right? That's true. Who knew she could do it?
Her relationship with John wasn't nearly as eventful as her previous, though it did result in, obviously, another child. 3 years later, we're just going to skip over what this baby is. There's just another baby. We don't know if it's a boy or a girl.
Just baby. I mean, she's had so many. She probably didn't know either.
Well, so 3 years. Oh, Jesus Christ, this woman. 3 years later, she left John Chillingworth for her secret lover, John Price. She really likes to double him up, man.
I was just like, comes in twos. I love that I don't remember the story. This is great.
This is so annoying. This bitch loves her some men with the same name.
Yeah.
Now, John Price, John P., John number two?
John number two.
John number two had three children of his own when he and Catherine entered into their affair. His marriage had ended in 1988, and his youngest daughter stayed with his ex-wife, and the two older children moved in with him. Despite being well aware of her violent reputation and murky past, John moved Catherine into his home in 1995. Talk about father of the year.
For real, though.
Mm-hmm. But his children did like her, and John was making a ton of money working in the local mines. Overall, life was seemingly sunshine and rainbows, at least at first. 3 years later, John refused to marry her, and he and Catherine got into a huge fight. As a form of retaliation, she videotaped items that John had, quote-unquote, stolen from work, allegedly stolen, and she sent the tapes to his boss. One tape. She sent it to his boss.
Un tape. Got it.
A tape. The items were out-of-date medical kits that had been scavenged from the company trash. Ew. Why?
Yeah, I don't know what that brings to the table, but okay.
Either way, it did get John fired from his job. A job that he had held for 17 years. But because of what was stolen, his bosses had no choice. The day he got fired, John kicked Catherine out of the house, and she was forced to return to her own home while the news of her betrayal spread around town. A few months later, John apparently forgave her because they started up their relationship again, although this time he wasn't letting her move in. Their fighting increased to the point that most of John's friends jumped ship and didn't want anything to do with him while he was with Catherine. And get this. 5 years later, in February 2000, the year 2000, Y2K, a series of assaults culminated with Catherine stabbing John number two in the chest. In the chest. She stabbed him.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Again, yeah. I don't know what to say.
Now,
yeah.
Caveat, I'm not sure how serious these stabbings were because he fucking survived. And then he kicked her out of his house.
I mean, yeah, I should hope so. Can I just need a little bit of space because you just kind of, I don't know, stabbed me in the chest. Yeah.
Then, on February 29th, he stopped by the Scone Magistrate Court and took out a restraining on her to keep her away from him and his children. Fine a fucking Lee. Good move, Dad. Ugh. John even went as far as to tell some of his coworkers that if he didn't show up to work, it was because Catherine killed him.
When you tell people that, it should be a red flag to yourself that you think the person is capable of hurting you, right? Like, yeah.
Do you really want that kind of person in your life?
Connections, right? Maybe?
Right? Like, yeah.
Okay.
So John's coworkers were super concerned and really tried to urge him not to go home. But that good dad guilt finally kicked in because he was afraid she would murder his children if he didn't go home. So he went home, and to his surprise, Catherine wasn't there and had even sent the kids to a sleepover at a friend's house. All right? Only mildly suspicious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He went to hang out with a neighbor before returning home to sleep comfortably in his own bed. And I'm sorry, it seems like it would have been a good opportunity to pack some things and take your coworkers' advice and get the fuck out of there. Obviously, like picking your kids up and then ditching town.
Right.
But no, that's not what John did. The next day, the neighbor woke up at 6 a.m. and saw that John was still there and his car was still in the driveway. This is weird. He should have already been at work. Around the same time, his employer saw that he wasn't there and sent one of his coworkers to go check on him. The coworker and the neighbor met outside of John's, and instead of starting with the front door, they for some reason went to his bedroom window to try to get his attention. I guess they were just thinking, hey, he overslept, like this will wake him up. But, you know, after no response, they went around to the front door, and that's when they spotted the blood.
The coworkers immediately alerted the police, who arrived around 8 a.m. The police broke down the back door and found John's body. Catherine had stabbed him with a butcher knife while he slept. Lying next to him was Catherine, who was passed out after taking a large number of pills in an attempt to kill herself. You might be wondering what actually happened that fatal night. Well, let's see what the evidence tells us, and warning, it is about to get a little graphic. John woke up, presumably with Catherine being, you know, like creepy over him, tried to turn on the light, and then tried to escape from her. She chased him through the house, and he managed to get to and open the front door. But he either stumbled and fell back inside, or Catherine dragged him back into the house. Either way, she stabbed him at least 37 times in his front and back, with a lot of the punctures hitting his vital organs. He bled out in the hallway. A few hours after he was dead, Catherine... Oh, God. All right, super graphics coming up. A few hours after he was dead, Catherine skinned him and hung his skin from a meat hook hanging from one of the doorways. Then she decapitated him and cooked parts of his body. His head was found in a still warm pot along with vegetables. Just a little stew.
I was just going to say skull stew.
Oh man, that's so gross. Based on the temperature of the contents, it was determined that cooking was done early in the morning. She cooked him into a meal of meat, baked potato, pumpkin, beetroot, zucchini, cabbage, yellow squash, and gravy. There were two plates. Each place setting had a note beside them with the names of John's children on it. Like, she was going to serve him to them. How disgusting, horrible, monstrous.
Traumatic.
Oh, my God.
All of the words. Ugh.
A third portion was later found thrown out in the backyard. There's speculation that Catherine herself tried to eat it, but just couldn't actually stomach the meal. She arranged John's body with his left arm draped over an empty 1¼ liter soda bottle. Soda bottle, and his legs crossed, which was brought up during the trial as a symbol of her contempt for him.
I don't understand the symbolism, but okay.
Yeah, me neither, but that's what I said.
But that's what I said. But that is what I said.
But it is the fact. In addition to posing his body, she also left a handwritten and poorly spelled note on top of a picture of John, which was bloodstained and had small pieces of his flesh on it. Just the butcher aspect. I don't know.
All right. So at some point between leaving, what was it, elementary school and here, she learned to sort of write?
Yeah, but poorly, apparently.
I mean, she had elementary education.
Yeah. Yeah. She could say some things, get the point across.
Yeah, what did her note say, Avery?
Her note said, "Time got you back, Jonathan, for raping my daughter. You to Beck for Ross, for little John. No play with little John's dick, John Price." Period. Done.
All right.
So, huh? What?
What is...
Yep, yep. So it sounds like she was accusing him of raping and molesting her daughter and his own children, which wasn't found to have any grounds at all.
All right.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe she's just trying to make him look bad in the final moments. Maybe it was just she...
Her defense?
Yes. Maybe perhaps she was delusional and had actually started to believe like her own lies.
Mm, yeah, no.
I mean, all very possible. But regardless, it's not supposed to be true. So now that that's all over with, let's talk about the trial itself. First, Catherine tried to plead guilty to manslaughter, but that was rejected. She was arraigned on March 2nd, 2001 on murder charges, and she entered a not guilty plea.
All right, so switching it up, all sure, right.
Yeah, okay. Really rolling the dice. She was set to go to trial in July, but her lawyer got sick and the trial was rescheduled for October 15th, 2001.
Must have been really sick.
For real. The presiding judge, Justice Barry O'Keefe, called in extra potential jurors because of the extremely graphic nature of the evidence that was going to be presented. 60 jurors in total were brought in and were offered the option to be excused due to the graphic photographic evidence. 5 excused themselves. Then, when the witness list was presented, several more dropped out. I'm assuming because maybe, like, they knew, maybe they knew a witness, like, couldn't be impartial or something. But, I don't know.
Yeah.
More dropped out. Later that day, Catherine's attorney spoke to the judge. The next day, her plea was changed to guilty, and the jury was dismissed. So, coming along. Justice O'Keefe ordered a psychiatric assessment to determine if Catherine understood the consequences of making this change to her plea and if she was fit to actually make the guilty plea.
Catherine's legal team had planned on using amnesia and dissociation as part of her defense. According to Healthline.com, there are multiple types of amnesia. There's retrograde amnesia, which is when you lose existing, previously made memories. This type of amnesia tends to affect the recently formed memories first, while older memories, like those from childhood, are usually affected more slowly. This can be seen in diseases like dementia. Then there's anterograde amnesia, which is when you can't form new memories and is usually temporary. Think a blackout from drinking way too much, but it can also be permanent, especially if the hippocampus of your brain becomes damaged. For some reason, it just really makes me think of the movie 50 First Dates.
I mean, yeah, it's about amnesia, so.
I was also just recently, sidebar, talking to somebody about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, specifically the scene where Drew Barrymore is trying to teach Adam Sandler to read. So I was talking to somebody about pancakes, and I was like, oh, you're having panclogs? Because that's what he does. Oh
my God. I haven't seen that movie in so long.
Me neither. Anyway. There is also infantile amnesia, which is probably the most common. Most people can't remember the first 3 to 5 years of their lives, right?
Isn't that like everybody?
Yeah, it's infantile amnesia where you can't remember.
But like, I don't know why that even has to have a name then. It just seems like you just don't remember that. Okay, whatever.
I guess there are some people that do remember. And so the rest of us have infantile
amnesia.
Aren't
they special?
Yep.
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
And last, there is transient global amnesia, which is actually a relatively misunderstood condition. Those who experience transient global amnesia have confusion or agitation that comes and goes repeatedly over the course of several hours. They might experience memory loss in the hours before the attack and will probably have no lasting memory of the experience. Scientists think that transient global amnesia occurs as the result of seizure-like activity or brief blockage of the blood vessels supplying the brain. It occurs more frequently in middle-aged and older adults. And my guess is that this is the type of amnesia that Catherine was going to use in her defense. Just a guess, though.
Yeah. Muy posible.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've been brushing. No.
Been brushing up on your Espanol.
Yeah.
Sí. All right. Now, there are several different causes. Nope. There are several causes to the different types of amnesia. Damage to the hippocampus, which we just mentioned. The hippocampus is the part of the brain in charge of memories, of forming them, organizing them, and retrieving them. These cells are easily disrupted by toxins and anoxia.
Wait, what's anoxia?
I'm so glad you asked. Anoxia is a depletion of the oxygen levels in the brain. The depletion can't be enough to cause lasting brain damage and memory loss that can be temporary. Oh, and the memory loss can be temporary. This makes me think of like when you're like doing sex acts and like choking people. Mm-hmm. Is that like
possibly? I wasn't thinking exactly that.
Yes, you were.
But I was thinking that like short term oxygen levels being, well, I generally just going through your body at all, but especially oxygen to the brain is not common, but I mean it happens in lots of circumstances.
Uh-huh.
Right?
I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of circumstances in which it could happen.
This is way beyond my depth, so I really don't know. It's just what I was thinking. I could be 1,000% wrong. Ignore me.
Same. Dementia, which we also mentioned earlier, with retrograde amnesia and Alzheimer's disease. In both of these diseases, the individual tends to lose their more recent memories first, while the older memories stick around a little bit longer. Head injuries, traumatic head injuries, and those caused from stroke, tumors, and infections can cause memory loss. The concussions from these injuries can be temporary or permanent and can last from hours to weeks, even months and years after the injury is received. Booze. Short-term alcohol use can cause blackouts, which is a temporary form of anterograde amnesia. Long-term alcoholism can cause...
A syndrome. That's a rough one.
Can cause... I'm going to try it. Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome, and I definitely butchered that one, so please forgive me. If you develop this condition, you will have difficulty forming new memories, but may not be aware of it.
That's weird. Like you wouldn't even know, like, realize that you don't remember.
You also probably don't realize that you're an alcoholic, so you're very unaware.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe you do realize you're an alcoholic and you just don't give a shit.
Yeah, exactly.
And finally, trauma or severe stress can actually cause another type of amnesia known as dissociative amnesia. With this, your mind rejects thoughts, feelings, or information that you're too overwhelmed to handle. A specific type of dissociative amnesia called dissociative fugue can lead to unexpected traveling or wandering. It can also lead to amnesia around the circumstances of traveling, as well as forgetting other details of your life. Sounds kind of scary.
Yeah, it really does.
Who are you?
Oh, you're so funny.
I know, but looks aren't everything. My favorite dad joke. I make it every time. I never miss an opportunity.
It's fair. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
All right. Do you. So, dissociation. You might feel disconnected from your thoughts, feelings, memories, and surroundings. It can affect your sense of identity and your perception of time. I feel like it's just all anxiety that I feel every day.
Mm-hmm, right?
These symptoms can go away on their own, but can take hours, days, or weeks. Those experiencing dissociation because of a particularly troubling experience or suffering from a mental illness will more than likely need to seek treatment. And that is what I'm doing.
You sounded like...
a commercial.
Yes! Yes, this medicine may cause drowsiness.
That's what I was going for.
Or death. I guess they all are.
Those okay. experiencing death, please contact your nearest hospital. Yeah.
Yes, if you see signs of death, please let us know. We would like to know for trials. Oh,
so
good Lord.
Right now.
Okay. All right. I'm so sorry. We have more science to talk about.
We'll probably skip forward about 48 seconds and we'll be done.
No, I'm going to skip through these. I'm not reading all these 10 bullet points. So let's summarize. What are the symptoms of dissociation? Dissociation, you might ask. Well,
is sweating a lot? I'm super sweaty.
Don't worry, we're here with a handy dandy little list for you, and I'm going to tell you some I just randomly picking out of here. You can have tunnel vision, hear voices in your head, feel no pain, feel like your heart is pounding, which could lead to sweating. Feel like you're a different person.
It also might be the laptop sitting on my lap.
Might be. Or this one just seems the most fun. Get absorbed in a fantasy world that seems real. Well, actually, or it could be awful, regardless. The causes of dissociation can be really similar to those of amnesia. Such as trauma, you know, when something really bad happens to you, you disconnect from your body to kind of save yourself from experiencing and remembering the trauma, right? Back to Catherine. It's reported that in relation to Catherine's case, most psychiatrists support this claim, but consider her still sane. And two psychiatrists concluded that Catherine suffered from borderline personality disorder, which we have talked about before.
Can you refresh my memory? Because I really don't remember.
All right. It is
just a brief one.
Okay. I'm even going to shorten what we wrote. The personality disorder is a illness marked by ongoing pattern of varying moods, self-image, and behavior. Which the symptoms can be impulsive actions and problems with relationships, which, you know, not too surprising that that is in line with people that commit heinous crimes. People with borderline personality disorder can experience mood swings and display uncertainty about how they see themselves and their role in the world. So despite all of this, she was deemed fit to plead guilty and things continued along to sentencing. During this hearing, Catherine's lawyers asked if she could be excused from the room to avoid hearing some of the facts. Remember, she was supposed to have amnesia. Well, her application was refused, you know, as it kind of should have been, so she stayed and had to listen. Forensic pathologist Dr. Timothy Lyons had performed the autopsy on John number two?
Number two.
John number two.
That's the one she killed, right?
Yeah, I just couldn't remember because we didn't write down which one. John number two. And determined that the entire procedure of skinning and decapitating him took 40 minutes. So, not a crime of passion. Just, you know, cleaning up, doing your favorite hobby, what have you. When the doctor took the stand at Catherine's hearing, she became hysterical and had to be sedated. On November 8th, Justice O'Keefe sentenced Catherine to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And due to the severity of her crimes, her file was marked as never to be released, which I love.
Same.
Stamp. Never, ever.
I know. I just imagine this giant, like, rubber stamp. Yeah. Never release.
Never. That's how it would be in a movie, at least.
Like whipping noise?
Yeah. I guess it is kind of a whipping noise. Anyways. This is the first time in Australian history that a woman has received this type of sentencing. Or marking, I would guess is what they say.
That is what they say. That's why
okay.
It says that.
All right. Well, in June 2006, Catherine appealed her sentence, saying that life in prison without the possibility of parole was too severe of a punishment for her crime. Well, three justices dismissed that appeal rather quickly. I'm sure part of the reason, you know, aside from the brutality of what she did, was that Catherine has never given a reason for the guilty plea, nor has she ever accepted responsibility for the attack. Well, now she's in her 60s and still in prison. So
suck on that, Catherine.
Guess your efforts were in vain. And that's fine. And after that really intense story, I think it's time to wind down.
Yeah, I could use a glass.
Yeah. All right, let's get to it.
Whoop, whoop. And we're back. And Avery, do you want to tell us a little bit about what mask we're doing tonight?
Yes, happy to. All right, so this one we're going to do is the Peter Thomas Roth 24 karat gold mask, which we've done a couple of gold masks before, but why stop the trend?
No, we are princesses and we are worth it.
So we have already done this mask. We just took it off our faces, actually. We just didn't want it to get hard and make it perhaps uncomfortable for us, so we did it in advance. It is a quick mask, so we have already started our timer as well for 10 minutes. And we will just kind of chat through it while you guys have time to hopefully try it out yourself. So a little more about the 24 karat gold mask. This lavish pampering treatment helps to improve the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles for a youthful-looking complexion. Caffeine helps tighten and firm the skin while... I'm sorry. Peridot? Is that right? While Peridot?
Sure. Sounds right.
Sure. And firm the look of skin while Peridot and
Could be Peridot.
Peridot? Okay. Well, whatever. The gemstone. It's an exquisite gemstone, obviously. I'm very fancy. But it's rich in magnesium, which re-energizes and helps reduce the aging effects of stress, which we definitely need. We are what people like to call type A. Stressful lives we lead.
No, not us.
The 24 karat gold imparts an opulent radiant glow and locks in moisture for ultra-hydrated skin, which, as we've talked about before, I really need. So the key benefits here, shocker, one of the main ingredients is 24 karat gold. Basically, this one ingredient is in charge of helping lock in the moisture and keeping your skin firm by maintaining collagen in the skin and inhibiting the breakdown of elastin. Collodial gold is also known as activated gold. Gold helps lift, firm, and restore the lost elasticity. And then there's caffeine, an antioxidant known to help firm, contour, and tighten the appearance of skin.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right, great.
And like we said, it's a quick mask, so you just apply it generously in a non-transparent layer to your clean skin, thoroughly covering your entire face. Leave it on for 5 to 10 minutes and rinse thoroughly with warm water. You can use this two to three times a week or as often as you desire. So we just did it the once, but basically it shouldn't be too harsh.
No. And I think that I did not apply enough to my skin because I just looked shimmery and quite frankly, in the pictures, we look kind of like greasy and dirty. Like,
I mean, haters gonna hate, Nicole.
I am hating on my own self. You looked beautiful and radiant.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
I, however, looked like a little grease ball. I just think I did not apply enough to my face. That being said, it still did its job, right? It, like,
oh, absolutely.
Stuck to my skin. It was there. It lasted the 10 minutes. I did not think it had a very golden hue on either of us. Like, you could kind of see it, but it wasn't, you know, very clear, I guess, it wasn't super obvious that we had a face mask on, right?
Yeah, it was.
That's kind of how I
slightly
felt.
Transparent, not yeah. opaque.
Yeah, exactly. During the mask, I'm just going right into how I feel about it, obviously.
Yeah, go for it.
But yeah, after I took the mask off, I thought the taking of the mask off was a little bit weird, like, it was very sticky coming off. It wasn't sticky going on or sticky during, but I felt like it was sticky coming off. Less like Elmer's glue and more like a maple syrup.
Interesting, because I don't remember experiencing that at all, but I just took a warm washcloth and just like actually wiped it.
Oh, and I splashed warm water on my face. So that could be the difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Warm washcloth. Way to go.
Yeah. Avery for the win.
Yeah. And when actually, it was really nice because what you're talking about, it wasn't like overly gold, but I had like a gray washcloth. And when I wiped it off, very gold.
Love so. It. I love it. Okay. Do you have any thoughts or feelings in addition to mine?
Yeah, I guess I'm with you. I kind of thought it would be a little more like obviously gold, but I think, you know, the golden hue didn't, I mean, doesn't bother me. Just not what I was actually picturing in my head when I think of a gold mask.
Yeah.
I think it's really easy to apply. I like that it's only on for a couple of minutes. So something you can quickly do, especially if you're trying to like go out for an event, if you're trying to get a little caffeine in your skin and help tighten and look a little more youthful. I think that's a nice benefit. And to be honest, I looked at reviews online and they were all like incredibly positive. So I think overall it is supposed to be a good mask. My skin was a little red when I took it off and I feel a little flushed. But that may just be the fact that I like wiped it off.
True.
And like I'm a little warm right now. So that might just be environmental and not the mask itself. But I don't think my, I mean, you can tell me my cheeks look very red anymore.
No. No.
All right, so yeah, I think it's more the wiping that made my face red.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I thought it was great. I would, I mean, can we just do grades?
Yeah, go for it.
I would give it an A. Easy breezy. Did what I expected.
Okay. I'm not as generous today as I normally am. I did. It was a fine mask while it was on, like no irritations or whatever. I did, when I took it off, like I said, it felt kind of similar to like a maple syrup coming off of my face.
Yeah.
And then my face almost felt a little bit sticky. I was like, did I not get it all off? But then, you know, I put a little bit of moisturizer on. It feels fine. Feels fine now. It doesn't feel super sticky.
Yeah.
I'm going to just get B minus.
Okay. I feel like normally when we do anything with like hyaluronic acid in it, which this has, and if it actually does a good job, your skin is a little sticky because it has like kind of that moisture barrier built up.
Yeah.
But that might be just my opinion on the random mask we have done.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. As we have stated many a times, we are no experts.
By no means.
No, we just like things.
We like trying face masks. Well, all masks, not just for the face.
Actually, I was talking to my mom earlier today, and we were, I don't even remember what we were talking about. I was looking for something in the store, and I was on the phone with her. And she was talking about, like, oh, I feel like you and your friends are really good about, like, self-care. I was like, yeah, we try to be.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's important.
Yeah, you only get one body, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so it was, I just thought it was really cool that she, like recognized that, like, we go out of our way to, like, take care of ourselves.
That's true. That is nice.
Yeah. Like, it's also very generational. Like, I don't think our parents made sure, like, do that. I think they maybe even now kind of struggle with it.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I first started getting massages because, you know, like I hurt my back. I asked my mom how she never got massages, and she's like, it just wasn't a thing. It wasn't talked about. You didn't go do that. And I was like, yeah, I need them constantly to be a normal functioning human.
Yeah. Yeah. No. They're fantastic. I got one a few weeks ago, and I was just like, I need to do this regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I went and...
It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, me and Chelsea went and got couples massages together.
Oh, that's right.
It was great. It was great. And I heard them. I heard her flip over, and I was like, why have I not flipped over yet? And then my masseuse just hit this knot in my back, and I was like, that's why I'm still
That's
why I'm still here. Okay. Got it. She's not as tense as I am.
Well, I know we only have a few minutes left before our timer.
Yeah.
We were trying to keep this short because our story was a little long this week, so we can obviously talk more on the next episode about just life, things we've been doing, all that jazz. But I guess we wanted to give general updates of, like, where the heck we've been and why we went on.
And why we semi-ghosted you.
Yeah, like an accidental hiatus. To be honest, I mean, like we said in the very beginning of this episode, like, whoops, of a sudden it was November.
Yeah, life happened. Sorry. For me, I will go first because my updates are not as exciting. I did, I was fostering a dog for a little while. It was a little bit stressful. She had severe separation anxiety. She tore up a little bit of my house, had a few accidents, but she did find a new home. She's got an adorable brother, like great new family. Somebody's always home because they're on opposite work schedules. And just, I think that was like, you know, probably the most exciting thing that happened to me during the break.
Yeah, definitely took a lot of time and energy for you.
Yes, it was a little bit exhausting, a little bit mentally and physically draining, but she was super sweet. She was great. She's got a great new home. She's, bless him, I heard, very happy. So.
Yes, and you did a lovely thing fostering her because, if I'm correct, you did rescue her from a kill shelter.
Yeah, so she came up from Texas from a high kill shelter, and she had two doggy siblings that came. Her previous owner passed away. The owner's family surrendered all of three of the dogs to a shelter, and it happened to be a high kill shelter. Mm-hmm. The rescue I was working with, they rescued all three of them, and unfortunately they did get separated in the rescue process, but I think they have all found new homes. At least the one that I fostered did. Little tiny monster,
little
sweetheart.
And in case anyone didn't hear that is your timer, so if you were doing the mask, feel free to take it off whenever you wish.
Go ahead and wash your face. Go wash your face.
Girl, wash your face. Okay. And then I guess my news is I'm pregnant. So I've just been preoccupied. I'm due in April. So we've known for 5 months now. So yeah, it's just busy. We've got different priorities. And yeah, also fighting the fatigue. That stuff is real. So I've been taking naps, and I never take naps. It just, yeah, the energy levels day by day. Who knows?
Yeah.
But so that's great.
But we are super excited for our future little baby.
Yes. Yes, it's all very exciting. Big changes ahead, which, you know, we will see how this changes the cadence of our podcasting.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, we're going to do it. We enjoy doing this. It's just, you know, the time.
Yes. It is time consuming. It is, but it's fun. It's a fun hobby. It is a hobby, though.
Yes.
Like, can't take up our lives.
We research and talk about these things all the time anyways. It's just sitting down, actually writing the story, recording, editing, what have you. So we talk about it no matter what.
And we will do our best to include you.
Yeah.
Moving forward as much as we can.
Yes, we will not go dark for another 5 months. I can promise you that.
Yes. Might be a week or two here and there, but we won't completely ghost you again.
No.
And so I guess is that it for this week?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. We're all wrapping it up. Be sure to, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, congratulations to Avery. feel free to send us an email at maskedmurderpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on all the most of the socials on Facebook and Instagram at Mass Murder Podcast. And I guess that's all for this week.
Take care of yourselves.
Sources. Gotta do this.
Oh, wonderful idea.
Yes. Sources for this week include Wikipedia.org, Murderpedia.org, Healthline.com, WebMD.com, MayoClinic.org, and the National Institute of health.gov. Oh, I also used Google Maps to kind of figure out where things were.
Really just giving everyone the credit, huh?
Everyone gets the credit is due where credit is due.
Wise words by Nicole.
Yes. Put it on a mug.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh my God.
All right. We appreciate you all. Goodbye.
Bye.